Hello and welcome to this Piecast, coming to you from Southsea's favourite record cafe, Pie and Vinyl. It's a great podcast. Around the table, I'm joined by Steve.
Hello.
Rad.
Hi.
And fresh new recruit, Ruben.
Yo.
I'm James Sandy, and in the next half an hour or so, we are going to blow your mind with some of our personal best choices of 2013, some of the albums that we've got to know and have started to love. We're going to also be talking about best live things that we've witnessed, our favourite Pie and Vinyl moments from this very store, which has expanded since our last podcast.
I'm glad you noticed that. I thought you did. I was going to point it out, but you did notice. That's good.
I'm sitting now where the front door, well, it's still there, but where the front, the main entrance used to be, and I've got a beautiful kind of fisheye view of the whole new ambience. And I have to say, it looks great in here. It looks really, really nice. Come down. If you don't believe me, come down, see it for yourself. I think that's a good advert. We're also going to be looking at some things, I think, that are coming up in 2014. How did we get to 2014? I don't know. Buck Rogers got to 1986, and I was amazed. I was surprised when we came to 1986. Now we're in 2014, nearly. So, anyway, we're going to start by talking about our favourite records of 2013. And Steve, what's the first one you're going to throw?
Okay, I've got to state first of all, it's in no particular order. So these are my personal top three. I will officially announce the store's top 10 records of the year a bit later on.
Might do a drum roll for that, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, there should be some things sent to you if you sign up to our mailing list. There'll be some more little bits sent through to you. And we'll have some fun with that as well, hopefully. But anyway, my first personal choice is Dirty Beaches. Now, his second record, his first release, Badlands. I discovered this artist watching a few acts in France, and he just absolutely blew my mind. He's a bit like a kind of David Lynch mixed with Elvis, oriental, by a Canada.
This is all new to me. Those are two amazing reference points.
Really is. He likes to honour his father's memory, who was in a band in the 50s, who died. So that's his spin. He's kind of reclaiming his look to make modern music in that vein. And it's incredibly intense. And the second record, Drifters, it's actually a double record. Drifters / Love is the Devil. I actually went to see him recently in London. Again, the performance was incredible. It's really sort of industrial sounding, quite haunting. Lots of, again, Lynchian kind of sounds. The first half is dramatically different than the second half. And Love is the Devil is almost like a breakup album. So you've got these two completely different records. Really should clash with each other, but they work very well. The second one's quite slow and kind of soundscapey. He worked on a soundtrack actually just before this release, Water Park, and it's just really stuck with me. It's the visuals that accompany the music that really work. That's definitely in my top three this year, and I thoroughly recommend it.
That's Dirty Beaches.
Dirty Beaches, yeah.
Okay, spell that carefully.
D-I-R-T-Y-B-E-A-C-H-E-S.
Oh, he nearly tripped up there.
Oh,
let's move to Rad. Rad, you're a young man about town. What's your first choice of play for the year?
Again with Steve, in no particular order, because I just couldn't do that. Do it alphabetically. The first person I'll talk about would be Nick Haven, the Bad Seeds, Push the Sky Away. I talked about them during an earlier podcast. It's probably the one before
that
last.
Is a fine choice. I have to endorse
that.
Great
choice. I'm flipping inside.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a cheap in the cave in the Bad Seeds, because this is kind of my exposure to them. Prior to this album, I'd heard the odd bit here and there, mostly via the X-Files soundtrack, but otherwise I hadn't really been overly exposed to the cave in the Bad Seeds. 15th studio album for them. And I'd say, I was a massive Grindelwald fan before I was a Bad Seeds fan. So this album is kind of special for me in that sense, because I think most of the reviews I've said have kind of agreed with this as well. It kind of borrows from sort of Bad Seeds' kind of middle ground, like middle career sort of songwriting-manship, if you like, like, you know, Nick Cave's ability to kind of create a picture, but it also has the intensity of Grinderman's kind of thrashy recipe, I suppose.
And there's some significant, I'm a big Nick Cave fan, as you know, and there's some significant kind of absences from that record. So you've no longer got Mick Harvey, who's not on this record. You haven't got Blitzer Bargeld, which I think is the greatest name in rock and roll. It has to be. But you do have people like Barry Adamson, who's an old seed, if you like, an old bad seed, coming back and playing on this record. And it is, I think for them, it is a real kind of masterpiece. You know, it kind of encapsulates, as you said, it encapsulates the kind of Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds sound, builds in bits of Grinder Man, bits of his solo work as well, but takes it somewhere else.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it sort of manages to meander through being calm and gentle, and then sort of heads back towards being fresh and aggressively beautiful at the same time. And I think that's kind of a decent recipe for me. They've mixed that one well, and I thoroughly appreciate it. It's a great record.
It has a beautiful cover as well, and the story of the cover is the photo on the cover is Nick Cave walking in on his wife getting changed, right? Now, if you've not seen the cover, go and look at the cover, because I do not believe that story, because it is so artistically kind of, you know, set, that picture. Great picture. I can't believe it was just an accident.
I can't believe he didn't notice she was sleeping with the cameraman and didn't notice
it. Wow, you know, these things are, they go unnoticed, don't they?
Yeah, so, don't tell him. Well, there might be an angrier record for their next release.
But a great choice.
Kind of lends to my fantasy of Nick Cave kind of rocking that suited look 24 hours a day as well, though, you know. Right. All in black, massive white epaulets, just what, 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon while his wife's getting changed. You know?
He's a well turned out gent.
He is. I think.
And
he
from
is.
Him, yeah. We move to Ruben, our new recruit.
Ruben. Yes, indeed.
Ruben. Now, tell us your first choice for 2013. What was, again, not in any particular order, but a record you've loved?
I do not intend to be contentious, so there is no order whatsoever. Also, I came unprepared, so here it goes.
You're overqualified already.
I'm great.
In front of him, very detailed.
I only have a cup of coffee and the shakes, and that will probably help me out. My first selection is Woman by Rye. Now, this record is an ode to female beauty. It's down-tempo R&B at its finest, with Milosh exercising his amazing vocals. He sounds exactly like Saeed, smooth operator all the way through. And I have to say, when I saw him live back this summer, it was an immersive experience. R&B is making a comeback this year. I mean, we can reference, say, the Arctic Monkeys, and how the bass line is very similar to what we used to hear in the late 80s and 90s.
Now, Saeed, smooth operator, for our English listeners, I think we would say Sade.
Sade? Yeah, Sade.
Sorry, that's part of my Americanisms.
Americans go their own way.
Sade. That is, I stand corrected.
Anyway, so there's a beautiful vocal.
It's very beautiful indeed, and I fell in love with that record, and the cover is also very beautiful indeed. I do recommend a listen, it's very nice.
I'm glad you said that, actually, because it's an artist I'm not that familiar with, but again, I've held the record in my hands thinking, this looks good, I should buy it, yeah.
You've got that problem though, haven't you? You have.
I'm an addict,
You've got that issue.
I'll take any record, I'm not fussy, yeah.
But it's a very punctual listen. Do listen to it on very special occasions, namely lovemaking.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna throw that one out there.
I like a special occasion for you.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
It's not for me.
Just business.
Yeah.
It's a never occasion for me. So.
Well, Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
what else can we say?
That was smooth.
Anyway, my choice.
I know what I'm getting from you for Christmas.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, keep running is all I'm going to say.
My
first choice is a record which is really kind of been a bit of a slow burn, really, but it's a record that I've come to love a lot. It's a record called Carry On by Willie Mason. And Willie Mason did an in-store here earlier on in the year, and I was very lucky to get to have a chat with him and interview him. Really nice guy. But the record itself is quite, I think, quite a mean feat. It pulls off a number of things. It's a kind of blues record. It's a kind of American folk record. But it's also a kind of alternative country rock album, which is, you know, that's a difficult balance. And there are people that do that kind of genre of music very well. I'm thinking kind of Neil Young territory.
Yeah.
And I think Willie Mason kind of moves in that direction, but you know, he does his own thing. He's really kind of got his own character and brings that out in the record. I've said before, on previous podcasts, there was a moment that I had in this store where he did an acoustic version of a track on the album called Show Me the Way to Go Home. It's just an amazing, amazing song. You know, only a short song, about 2-3 minutes, it just gets me. You know, I'm thinking about it now, kind of welling up slightly. It might be the strong coffee, I don't know. But yeah, great album, Carry On by Willie Mason. So check that one out.
He's such a gent, and it's that vocal, isn't it, that really sets him apart. It's a bit like Randy Newman, I guess. You know, it's just got his own thing going on, and doesn't compromise. Feels no need to kind of reimagine his music. You know, he is what he is, and being lucky enough to meet the guy, he's so laid back.
And there's some really kind of deceptively kind of simple melodies on the record, where, you know, I think, oh yeah, that's, you know, he's just sort of playing around in D minor chord, that kind of thing. You probably can play that myself. No chance. You know, the structure, the complexity of it is there as well. You know, and it's often, I think, in songwriting, that's often a real kind of, I think that's an element of genius. If you can bring that simplicity and convey it, but, you know, through real understanding of an instrument, you know, kind of guitar, you're there, really, aren't you? So anyway, let's move on to our second choices. We're back round. It's a round table.
Oh, we're back round. Okay.
We're going back to Steve. So what's number two, but not number two?
Right. Let's bring the tempo down again. You're not getting much out of me other than kind of darkness today, but
in the depths of winter.
Yeah. I've got the Flaming Lips and the Terror. being a massive Flaming Lips fan, really, really looking forward to this release. Wayne Coyne, now this year he's gone a bit mad. He's recently split up with his partner. I don't know if they're officially divorced. I know lots of different rumours, read lots of different rumours, being chucked out of various places, taking lots of drugs and sleeping with lots of women.
Sounds like rock and roll to me.
And that's something he always kind of rose above, you know. Had him as this kind of this higher kind of space psychedelia kind of champion that kind of really advocates peace and love, and perhaps he's abusing that. It sounds like he is. Still love you, Wayne.
Love you too.
Yeah. This record is bleak. You know, it's very bleak. It's hard work. You're not gonna kind of get it instantly, but it's a bit like Embryonic. I love that record as well. It's very instrumental. I think Embryonic offered much in the way of thunderous rock. Tharsis. The Terror has got more of a sort of mediative, melancholic melodies. It's sort of suffocating the sort of smoggy haze of the record. That just sounds like Japanese, doesn't it? No offense to a Japanese listener. You probably thought it sounded like English. But
it's interesting you should pick this record, actually, and particularly some of the references you made to your first choice.
You mentioned
David Lynch. Whenever I know he's made two or three records, I think, on his own, but he was involved in the kind of Danger Mouse and Sparkle Horse, Dark Night of the Soul project, which Wayne Coyle did a couple of tracks for as well, one track for.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff. You can't really put it in a box, can you?
No. It's just as if Wayne Coyle is having his come down on this record. It's very bleak. There's moments of light but just shimmering through slightly, and it's bleak, it's industrial, but still, I've not really heard too much like it and as good as it, so I keep going back to it. That's my second choice out of the three.
Excellent. You're listening to the Piecast, the podcast from Pie and Vinyl, and we're talking about our favourite records of 2013. Can you believe 2013 is nearly behind us already? Rad, what's your second choice?
Okay, my second choice would be the sophomore album from Death Heaven, Sunbather. I think if anyone that's kind of listened to the album would fall in line and say that it is a phenomenal record. It really is a great record. First impressions are that it's kind of an intense listen, but once you give it a bit of time and kind of digest it a bit more, it unfolds and you begin to realise the subtle nuances that have gone into kind of creating that sound. I think as a band, they had to kind of fight to achieve that sound. You know, like if you listen to Death Heaven's kind of EP and early stuff, it wasn't quite kind of as focused and as succinct as Sunbather is. And I think, after like kind of signing to Jacob Bannon's label Deathwish, the other guy from Converge, it seems to me that he's kind of focused them and given them like the right kind of direction to achieve that sound. But on top of that, I think they've kind of added like an army of fanboys worth of well, for pressure, I mean, to not suck, really. And, yeah, for what, from kind of the hum on the mill, if you like, they seem to have achieved that. I mean, personally, for me, I kind of instantly fell in love with it because I heard most of it, ISIS and other kind of Hydra-type label bands, within the kind of sonic side of the record. But yeah, I mean, I think the cake's kind of iced by the fact that every so often it switches from being kind of intense and very metal-infused to being akin to something that would belong on the Constellations label, such as like Godspeed You Black Emperor or Do Make Say Think. I think it's really well-balanced, and it kind of joins post-rock and black metal, I think, yeah, I'd say with stitches that even Buffalo Bill would be sort of jealous of, really.
Now, I'm sitting there thinking, is this darker or lighter than The Flaming Lips? And I'm not sure, on a scale.
I don't think its shade really comes into it as to whether or not it's a light or a dark album. I mean, the actual concept of the album is taken from how ridiculous the concept, like, the sunbathing is. You know, the actual act of sunbathing, like the whole kind of attitude towards, the modern attitude towards self-improvement. And so, you know, in terms of whether or not it's a dark record, I mean, you could argue that part of their kind of genre would be black metal, you know, the whole Converge side of things. That's what I'm talking about when I say an army of fanboy pressure. You get all these, there's definitely like notes of black metal in there, which you could argue is dark, but that can be ironic and amusing at the same time as well. And then with the kind of Godspeed have their darker moments, but they also have their absolutely bright and beautiful moments. And some of the other kind of post-rock bands, such as Explosions and Do Make Say Think, are out and out just beautiful, really. So I think, yeah, the shade doesn't really come into it. I think it's just an intense album that stitched two genres that are kind of diametrically opposed really well together. And, yeah, it just makes for a great listen. And they're phenomenal live as well. They carry it across live in, you know, with perfection, so...
I'm going to make a note of that because I think there's space for a prog rock concept album on sunbathing. And I could be the man. But anyway, let's move now to Ruben and your second choice.
Hello. I'm going to jump on the post-rock bandwagon and say that light and darkness, a spectrum, is a driving force for music, is be it sadness, be it gladness. But maybe with my second choice, I'm going to go for aggression, and that is Sigur Rós's Quaker. It's a departure from the kind of bath salts Valtari to a more aggressive kind of sound, and they dropped out the keyboardist, which turned them into a free piece set.
Is it more kind of auto park shop than greetings card shop? Is that what you're saying? is that where it's placed?
Especially with the opening track. I mean, actually, Brennenstein, that I probably am mispronouncing this because I am no way fluent in Icelandic, and probably my previous example with Shod might have just underwhelmed whatever I'm going to say. But
we'll take you on your word.
Near enough, exactly. It's all about exercising aggression in this album, and that departure is really marked in their live shows. It's not about the ethereal sound anymore. It's about making an entrance and projecting these amazing images. I think I'll delve into that when we select the live show, but yeah. But no, Sigur Rós, Quaker, check it out.
Is this the album that's got quite an unsettling cover?
It does have an unsettling cover. I believe it's an animal with a gas mask.
I'm not keen on that. I'm not a fan of that.
What, of gas masks in general, or just animals?
Animals and gas masks, generally.
I thought it was a kid with a hood on his head.
A kid with a hood?
Great DVD on that. I'll
speak to me afterwards.
Yeah, it'll be wrapped up in Christmas wrapping paper.
Anyway, the next album I've got is a bit of a... It's kind of a mainstream album, really. I'm not ashamed of that. And I know we've had it on the shelves here at Pine Vinyl. It's Suede's new record, Blood Sports, which was a huge release for them. Released on Warner, which was, you know, how they did that deal, I don't know. But they came back and they amazingly made a Suede record. And that sounds a bit strange thing to say, but I think they really honed their sound. You know, they sat down and said, what does Suede sound like? And what can we do that doesn't sound like stuff we've done before, but kind of sounds like stuff we've done before? That's a bit of a strange one to say, but there's some really nice songs on there. There's some real good singles, I have to say. You know, they're Suede, not always a singles band. Sometimes, you know, kind of focused more on a kind of themes of an album, and I suppose kind of concept albums in some ways. But some of the stuff off Bloodsports I really, really like. And also, Suede are always kind of characterised by very good photography and or artwork. And if you've seen the cover of the new, the current Suede album, it's a brilliant cover. There's a kind of
worse for the rest of their album covers, doesn't it? Apart from the one before, which I think Brett Anderson pounds hands up, or the band did, and kind of said it didn't work.
Yeah.
The front cover possibly said it all. So I think, yeah, maybe the front cover was really important for them.
Yeah, and looked beautiful as well. The vinyl version looked absolutely beautiful, you know, the kind of gatefold edition. Great, so I've been, you know, pleasantly humming along to that as I, you know, do me pottering in the shed and all those kind of different things. And somewhere in me, the young man is still, I think, swaying his hips to Brett Anderson's punchy moves. So, anyway, we're going to move now to our last choice of 2013. So, you know, all of these things our listeners to this podcast should be making a note of and asking Father Christmas for, I think. So, Steve, what's your last personal choice?
Right, the last one, okay. Ready for more depths. No,
are you going darker?
Yeah, we can go darker.
The chasm of
gloom. We're going, well, it's dark for them. It's Vampire Weekend's album, Modern Vampires of the City. I love this little band, they're fantastic. And you were talking about humming along to songs. Well, yeah, that certainly the first two records, that's what they're all about, you know, kind of great wordplay, great little pop songs, you know. Really enjoyed the first one immensely. The second one was great, and this one, you kind of think if they brought out another album similar to the first two, you've kind of heard it all before, but alas, they didn't. They kind of traded in some of their Afrobeat, their African influences, for a more kind of poppier tone, but almost with a sarcastic edge. It's loosely based on New York City. I mean, the front cover, we're talking artwork, which of course is very important to the vinyl connoisseur, is taken from the smog in New York City in 1930-something. And actually killed loads of people in New York City. It was a particularly strong wind that carried the smog over the city. So straight away, you know, that sets the tone of the record, I guess. And again, it's Vampire Weekend, looking at this modern world we live in and how the technology and how the ease of doing things or things being made simple for us to do is not necessarily a good thing. It's a great record. It's a record that you can hum along to, plus also kind of stop and think about what you just sang out loud and kind of go, oh yeah, that's good, that's clever. And again, it's got a bit of Alex Turner, quite a great contemporary lyric writer, where he kind of, it's almost kind of rapping sometimes, you know, kind of fuses together a lot of contemporary words.
You say sarcastic pop, and instantly I think of the Pet Shop Boys.
Right, yeah.
And I'm outed as a Pet Shop Boys fan.
Wow, don't be scared.
I've been hiding it for too long, I think.
You know, they really wear that on their sleeve, and you know, don't smile, etc., etc. But yeah, Vampire Weekend, it was surprisingly good. I guess that's the big thing about it. And it's just one of those I keep returning to.
Another great choice.
Sorry,
Rad. Your last personal choice.
This was a hard one to come to, really, because it was kind of like a bustle at the checkouts on the Boxing Day sales to squeeze into the top three.
You should be waiting for January, that's cheaper.
But I'd say, my final choice would probably be Deer Hunter's Monomania. Now, again, this was a total guest purchase for me. It came in, and I try to sort of try and buy something on a monthly basis that I've never heard of or that's new to me, just to kind of keep that excitement and that freshness going. Total guest purchase. And so 5 albums in for them. So they've got another 4 albums for me to sort of experiment with after having digested this one, which I've done. I've gone in and had a further listen. And first thing I noticed was that the Monomania is a complete shift away from The Hunter's original style. Like, they've got this kind of dreamy ambience to them, and they've kind of sacked that off completely and gone for a straight up garage rock album. Which was cool, because their back catalogue appeals to my tendencies, and this new record is kind of also does, so it's decent. I would say from most of the stuff I've read, it would appear that a lot of kind of Deer Hunter like diehards are kind of disappointed with the fact that they've moved away from their kind of ambience and they've done this odd U-turn. But for me, it's kind of a good thing, because much like Bradford Cox's personality, it keeps the band kind of exciting and unpredictable. I don't think, you know, I think it'd be quite a hard push to work out where they're going to go with their sixth album if that happens. It was decent in that sense, I think. The album made me dance. basically. It doesn't matter whether I'm watching them live or...
What kind of moves were you busting? I'm interested.
Mostly foot moves. Mostly sort of foot shuffly moves. But it makes me dance. And it inspires me, a bit like what you were saying earlier on with Willie Mason and the kind of simplicity of the good guitar work. It's inspired me to pick the guitar up and try my best to play along with these guys, so I think it's a good fun record, and it's certainly worth a listen.
Made him move and shake, which is all important in music, isn't it?
Exactly.
It is. Ruben, let's come to you. What's your third choice for 2013?
My final and last choice, and it's probably going to be very mainstream.
It's allowed.
It's Foles' Holy Fire. It's not a big departure from the previous sound. I think they discovered what distortion is, especially with the track Inhaler. They figured out what that was. But then it sort of tampers off to a very ethereal sound, back to things like, say, the track Spanish Sahara. So you have some tracks like Moon and Milk and Black Spiders that are very analogous to that one. So you can jump to My Number, you can headbang to Inhaler, but then you can sort of lay down and chill.
Was that a new band for you, or is that someone you kind of knew the history of?
Being in this country for the past 5 years, I was very new to this whole thing, and as soon as I heard about this is amazingly catchy, I'm very satisfied with that. Purchase it, it's great.
A satisfied customer.
Yeah. I am a very satisfied customer.
Do you know, I'm happy now, we can all go home. A satisfied customer. Well, no, we've got a few more things to do first, I think. My last choice is a band that I love. In fact, the band I've seen most times live. Okay, a Manchester band called I Am Clute. Okay, yeah, hopefully you've heard of them. They came out with a record this year called Let It All In, okay, which towards the beginning of the year. A great record for them. They're one of those bands that I can never understand, and I don't think I'm alone in this, how they're not more successful than they have been commercially.
Probably quite pleased that they're not.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, they sort of came onto my radar a long, long time ago. Probably about 10 years ago, actually, when they were sort of on the circuit as a support act. And they've just been very consistent in coming out with really fine, highly polished records. Great sort of... It's hard to describe. It's kind of bluesy stuff. It's kind of, I suppose... I said that to someone, and they said, no, it's John Lennon's territory. But it's not exactly that, but they're a Manchester three-piece, guitar, kind of indie rock, if you like. They made this record called Let It All In. There's a track on that album called Hold Back the Night, okay, which is just fantastic. It has, because Guy Garvey of Elbow fame is involved in some of the production, and as is Craig Potter, I think. It has some beautiful orchestral kind of elements to it, which builds right at the end of this record. Go out and get this record if you haven't got it. If you don't believe me, go onto YouTube. I believe that's popular with the kids these days. It's an online video sharing platform, I believe. Google, YouTube, whatever, Hold Back the Night. Watch the video. The video is an astounding piece of cinematography. I won't spoil what happens in the video, but it's a great song, great record. Go out and buy it.
Oh, great.
So,
once again, a very eclectic mix.
A very eclectic mix.
Possibly a sign for the amount of records that were released this year. Yeah. Certainly a vast amount.
We wouldn't have it any other way. So, excitingly now, we're going to move to Pye & Vinyl's top 10 records of 2013.
Drum roll, please.
I feel that we should have. The kind of Pearl and Dean... Led Zeppelin medley kind of thing in the background, all that kind of stuff, but we won't have that because we can't afford it. No. So Steve, start with number 10 and work your way to the top.
Like the sound of a pie being dropped on the floor.
Yeah.
From the top. Just trying to summarise 2013, for me it's certainly been the year of the comeback. So many artists have come back this year, as we all know, the Bowies, the Daft Punks, even the Arcade Fires, even the Vampire Weekends. But it's also been a great year for new music, and I guess that's the exciting thing. You know, we always chase the first time we've heard an artist we've really connected with. You know, we're permanently chasing that feeling, and that drives us on in investigating, exploring new music and new sounds. So 2013 has been a great year for music. It certainly has. Again, just in the vast amount of music that's actually been released. So whittling it down to 10 in the shot was quite hard, but we've managed to do it.
It's a brave job.
Democratically so. So in no particular order, because that's really hard, and we're actually going to get our customers to vote on each individual record. and they will decide which is the record of the year.
Democracy, I remember that.
Yeah.
What are the top 10 runners?
Top 10, okay. We've got Savages, Silence Yourself. We have got Kurt Vile, Waking on a Pretty Daze. We have got Unknown Mortal Orchestra 2. We have got Arctic Monkeys, and I won't summarise each one because we'll be here all night.
All of the details, I think, are on the Pine Vinyl website.
They are, and we'll be sending out a mail shortly. Trams with Grimm. Arcade Fire with Reflector. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, already been mentioned. Push the Sky Away. Mogwai, Les Revenants soundtrack. The Knife, Shaking the Habitual. And last but not least, The Bee of the Bang, Tremors and Nosebleeds, The Melodies of the Malady. Now,
an interesting choice, that last one.
Yeah, well, I'm going to read out what I've written here, because here we go. I'm just going to
answer
the trepidation here with, okay, I know what you're thinking. We're just saying this because we released it on our label. Do you think Rough Trade never do this? Ask yourself this. Have you heard it? If you have, would you disagree with us? If you haven't, you really should, and then potential claims of bias disappear as quickly as Witt & Co have you in the palm of their 13-fingered hand. We're extremely honoured to release Southsea's favourite son's second album and our very first release on our label in time for Record Store Day this year, and we genuinely believe it's one of the best things we've heard this year. A loose concept album, the banglings create the trademark luscious harmonies while Witt controls the atmosphere of the record using his baritone vocal like an orchestral conductor. Track by track, we are introduced to clever wordplay, unique instrumentation, and more twists and turns in a song. Core blimey, you are never really sure that the song has ended. The heart-racing happy sadness a stereo emits leaves us feeling like we are sat in a gothic church, on a boat, sailing at night time, off the edge of a waterfall. They sound like everything and nothing you've heard before, and that's why we love them. Don't take them for granted and listen. And that's why I had to read that out.
I think that's great. I think,
because that's what I would essentially have just said.
Yeah. Agreed.
So there we go. Come buy it. It's £10, and they're a great band.
What better recommendation could you ask for? So the 10 records that you've selected to be Pine Vinyl Top 10 of the Year.
Yeah.
How do people vote? How do we democratically vote on that?
We are going to post them all on Facebook, and using the joys of Facebook, you're going to, in inverted commas, like each record.
Uh-huh.
Everyone that likes the record, we will announce the winning record with the most likes. But everyone that enters, it's just basically a bit of fun. All the names will go into a hat, we will pull a name out by random, and the winner will get a meal in the shop and a £10 gift voucher. So it's worth a few minutes of your time just to press like whatever the albums you like. You can also suggest your favourite album of the year, and let's have a good little modern chat online, not looking at each other, using Facebook about our favourite records of the year.
A very simple act with massive, powerful consequences.
Yes.
That's what voting should be about, thank you. Anyway, let's move now to our favourite live show, or favourite folks we've seen live in 2013. I don't get out much, I have to say, due to a number of factors, but I'm fortunate that I do sort of stray into the odd live performance. A number of them in this very store, and I'll start because I think one of the favourite things for me this year, and one of the favourite bands I've seen live very recently, in fact, were Lanterns on the Lake when they were in the store doing an in-store performance, and they had a lot of kit and they had a lot of paraphernalia, and they occupied a good chunk of this building, or this at least this part of the building, because obviously we've expanded now. And there was a very heartening scene during their performance where Paul, I think the guitarist, was kind of in the crowd. He had people around him whilst he was kind of performing, which was nice to see. You know, it's nice to kind of, I don't think they've ever been that close to an audience before, so that would be my first choice of one of my favourite things live this year. Brad, what about you? What have you seen that you just tickled your fancy?
Obviously going through to go through my top 10 list to get to the top 3, and I realised as I was going through it that I've been a lucky boy this year, because I've been lucky to see, pretty, with the exception of one, everything that's been on my top 10 list.
Wow.
This was just as hard as winning it down to 3, really, choosing my best life.
You must know Father Christmas.
I just got a very, very relaxed girlfriend.
Okay.
Very relaxed and naive. But basically, my best live moment, I would say, and as I said earlier, I saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds twice this year. I saw them once at Optimus Primavera, which is my first exposure to them live. Mm-hmm. And then I saw them again a month or so later at Glastonbury. And obviously, you know, Primavera was amazing. First time I'd ever seen them live. Awesome show. But Glastonbury completely and utterly took the mantle. It was unreal. Like, there was, I don't know what they showed on iPlayer or what they didn't show, but there was this strange little interaction he had with this little dolly bird that kind of was elevated from the crowd. With like a kind of, it could have been cigarette smoke, could have been mist, I'm not sure, but she just kind of floated out wearing a pristine white dress. If you've been to Glastonbury, pristine white garments don't exist there, so I don't know how this occurred. But anyway, up she floated, and they kind of had this strange, we're really close to one another, except we're about 2 foot away, oddly sexual moment. And it made him everything that I've kind of assumed for him to be. You know, I've read a few of his books, Nick Cave and stuff like that, and it just kind of elevated him into this position of just a god of manipulation, really.
There was some footage of him, I think, from Glastonbury, disappearing into the crowd.
That was probably that.
Yeah. And the security were very worried that he just disappeared into the crowd.
I mean, during this point, I think he had one foot on someone at the front shoulder, and the other foot was being held by two people away. You know, two people away holding his foot with their hand. And that's how this.
Imagine the glory of being kicked in the neck by Nick Cave. what better could you ask for?
But it was a great show. So I was lucky with that.
Reuben, what about you? What have you seen live this year that's floated your boat?
I've been to many festivals. I was lucky as well, but I'll have to isolate yet again. Sigur Rós at the Wembley Arena. It's a massive place, full of history. Incredible. I mean, to hit a note for 45 seconds to sound imperceptible to the human ear, but at the same time evoke a 2-minute applause from the audience. Imagine so many thousand people.
That's a big venue, Wembley Stadium.
It is, and I didn't feel disconnected from the performance at all. I mean, the visuals it was an immersive experience, but it's just the sound. I cannot even describe it. I'm sorry, I'm breathless.
Even Pine Vinyl's recent expansion doesn't quite come close to Wembley Stadium, does it?
No.
But we are getting there.
Well, I mean, maybe a little bit.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Draw some arena, probably.
Was
it Wembley Stadium or Wembley Arena?
It was Arena. We're in Arena.
Arena, yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
It was Arena.
I was going to say, I can't imagine it actually working in Wembley Stadium.
I think they could do both simultaneously for a full stereo effect. It'd be very difficult.
I think me and Steve would definitely agree with Ruben, like in terms of their skill as performers. It's, I mean, both of us have seen this show, and I was blown away, and I'm sure you probably were as well.
Saw him a couple of weeks ago, and fantastic. Just the visuals that accompany the music, just really special, just otherworldly, just kind of really have to pinch yourself and kind of think, am I actually here? And Chauncey's just such a good voice. You just really appreciate live how good a singer he is.
You close your eyes for 30 seconds, and in your mind, everyone that's surrounding you has disappeared, and you are literally immersed in that sound. And then you open them again, and the feeling of kind of inertia when you realise that there are thousands of other people there next to you as well. They're just amazing to see.
That sounds powerful.
Yeah, James, you need to see them.
I need to get them on my list.
Yes, you do.
Steve, what about you? What's your favourite live thing you've seen this year?
Oh, well, I was thinking about this. I've also been a lucky boy this year. You're only as good as your last gig. So,
in radio, that's definitely true.
So my last gig was glam rock. I don't know if it's a mixture of being relieved it's kind of over with, just because there was a bit of work that went into it.
Mm.
But it was a really thoroughly enjoyable day. And I tell you what, I'm just talking on behalf of the local kind of musicians around here that played. But certainly bands from Brighton, bands from Sheffield came down. I mean, Bloodsport, Friends of the Shop, played for us a few times this year. Trams, you know, we mentioned them in our top 10 bands of the year. Local Boys from Chai, or Bognor, really. And then Esmond in the Witch. It was just a fantastic lineup. I mean, Demons played as well, and Curses were great. I think every single band that played, you know, hugely enjoyable. The venue really worked. And I had a great day. So I'm going to say glam rock. We worked that in with the Champagne Justice Boys and the Strong Island Recordings Boys and Beach Community. And it had its testing moments, but I think just about pulled it off, and it was a fantastic day.
You are a lucky boy. You are truly blessed.
Yeah.
So, Steve, Champagne Justice have sent some interesting selections and choices for this podcast, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's like a bat sign in the sky. I've just seen it. It's a cat on a sofa with a glass of champagne.
It always makes my eyebrow twitch when I see that in the sky.
Yeah, but anyway, they have... they would have been here tonight, actually, but Al and Neil have faxed in their top three of the year, and they have gone for Parquet Courts, tally up all the things that you broke. Favourite track is Stoned and Starving. Great song. Factory Floor. Their favourite track is Fall Back. And the OCs for Floating Coffee. Their favourite track is I Come From the Mountain. Great artwork on that record. Their favourite live performance was actually The Knife at Primavera Sound. So that's a bit controversial because they've really kind of separated their fans, I think, with their live performances. But yeah, so thanks, guys.
Excellent. Nice of them to wire that in for us, I think.
Yeah.
Very helpful. We're coming towards the end of the podcast now, so we've got a couple more things to cover before we finish. First and foremost, we must discuss pies and our favourite pies of the year, if we can do that very quickly. There's a full array of pies now available, isn't there? Extended menu. Do you want to just say something about that?
Well, I mean, first of all, we're offering all the pies on our menu. We've launched our new menu in tandem with opening the new space. James, stop singing.
Thought I was being attacked for a minute.
And yeah, we're up to about 42. We are certainly pushing the vegan, vegetarian, celiac market quite hard. There's nowhere in Southsea where you can get these kind of gluten-free offerings, and all of our pie and vinyl pies are made with gluten-free pastry. We also work with a local bakery, the Sweetie Pie Vegan Gluten-Free Bakery. So the pies have been extended, they're available all the time. We include specials with that. We'll soon be launching our own sweet pies as well. So, favourite pie of the year is a really difficult choice because we keep, you know, keep evolving, keep experimenting in the pie lab. We're coming out with different views. But I've got to say, it's a double cheeseburger pie, which is just, you know, when the guys, it kind of started with a barbecue pie, that was the idea behind it. It evolved into a double cheeseburger pie, and yeah, I kind of thought, it's not going to work. Sat down to try it, and it was absolutely delicious.
That's the Elvis influence, isn't it, again, coming out of
here now? It could be.
Rad, what about you? What's your pie choice?
Steve stole my favourite pie of the year. I have to agree with him, really.
You can share.
The double cheeseburger pie is brilliant. You know, it's, you know, again, it's gluten free, so it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. And, you know, like Steve said, conceptually, really shouldn't work, but it bloody does. But if I'm pushed, I guess if I'm pushed to come in with another choice, because Steve's already picked that, I'd say the Moon Blue, which is one of Prime Minister's pies. They took it away for a little while. They kind of discontinued it for a bit, which was sad. And
now it's back with a vengeance.
Yeah, it literally is back with vengeance. And I've, you know, given that I eat pie every day, all day,
every day, the pinnacle of fitness and health.
I ran here, you know. But yeah, you know, it's, I eat a lot of pie, and that one has been up there with most of them.
Top seller as well in it, Old Radstone.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's very popular part.
Ruben, what about you?
I'm going to respect my ancestry, my Hispanic ancestry, and say the Matador. It's a beautiful pie. Olives, chorizo, you know it.
I'm going to respect my confused ancestry.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that my favourite pie is the steak and Guinness pie.
Oh, traditional Buck Wales.
I do like that one.
So I do believe we've represented all of the different pies we do, which is great. Yeah.
Excellent. We're going to wrap up with our favourite pie and vinyl moment of the year, and then a quick look at 2014's releases. Steve, what's been your favourite moment, other than expanding and, you know, getting bigger and better and all those kind of things?
Yeah, it's been another rollercoaster year, which it's been so immensely enjoyable, and it really has. Kind of, you know, we never take for granted getting this far, which, you know, is the start of something, hopefully. But it's got to be Record Store Day, and that was a weekend that we were, and I say a weekend, it wasn't just a day for us. It was a day that will live long in the memory. It, a lot of work goes into that, you know, from buying in the records to liaising with potential artists that are going to play on the day to organising the setup of the shop. Obviously, we were a bit smaller then. And yeah, what a day it was. I say a day, weekend, because we launched our record label the following day, where we had a label launch in the Wedgwood Rooms. We also showed the documentary we're in, The Last Shop Standing, after Record Store Day, the registry. So yeah, there was quite a lot on our plate, but it went very well and it was hugely enjoyable. So I just can't wait for this year, 2014. We've got more space. We're hoping to get, we have Band of Skulls, which are a pretty big act, but yeah, we're trying to get some more exciting acts in to support us.
Excellent, I'm really pleased with that. Ruben, what about you? What's been your favourite Punk and Vinyl moment of the year?
I have to say Record Store Day was amazing, waking up that early and then seeing the massive queue and then feeling completely disappointed about the fact that everything just ran out before I get my hands on it. But probably I'm going to say the expansion, and it's because I can actually get a table here now. It's good.
That's a good point.
It's just getting a table. Wow.
My favourite moment of the year came when Steve sent me an email and said, this is all a bit hush-hush, but we may have Turin Breaks appearing in the store. And I thought, Turin Breaks, that band I grew up with and sort of know the music of and love. And lo and behold, they came and did a fabulous in-store. And again, I was really privileged to get to meet them, get to interview them, and they did some great music. You can check out the podcast on our podcast archive, which exists online. Hear what they said to me and what they played. Okay, we're going to wrap up now with 2014. It is coming fast over the hill, like a monster.
Yeah,
could be a
yeah.
single there for someone. I've picked out some choice cuts from my strange lens on life. But Steve, you've got some stuff that's coming up that's going to fill the shelves.
It's only, we're pretty soon going to be launching our Click and Collect service, which we're hoping will make pre-ordering a lot easier. We're not taking your money, we're not an online service. What we like to do is get people in the shop, because what we sell is an experience. What we're trying to do is make it a bit easier for you to, in advance, guarantee you get the records you want or love by the artist you release. So I've been playing around with that actually for our hopefully January launch. So I've got some bands in January and February that are releasing their records. So it's going to start straight away from January, some pretty big releases. I Break Horses, looking forward to their kind of second album. Mogwai with their latest records, big fan. War Paint, Stephen Malkmus, Metronomy. Broken Bells. They're some of the highlights off the top of my head anyway. That's for the first 2 months. So I'm sure there'll be plenty more announced soon.
Excellent. I did a bit of scouring of the internet. There's a new Bruce Springsteen release coming out, which is High Hopes. I think that's coming out soon.
High Hopes, yeah.
Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga
are
making a record called Cheek to Cheek, which I'm sure will be available on pink vinyl, I'm sure.
Maybe.
I'm predicting that might come along. Imogen Heap's got a new album coming out. There's another posthumous Johnny Cash release coming out called Out Among the Stars.
Yeah.
That's probably one to look out for. John Cale is kicking out some stuff in 2014.
Great.
Guns N' Roses, remember them? They're coming back with a new record.
Right.
Ill-advised.
No Chinese Democracy, please.
And then the lovely Lana Del Rey is coming out with an album called Ultra Violence, which is a very strange title, I think, but hopefully it won't be
very
too aggressive.
No. Clockwork Orange.
Yeah,
it's like a droog. It suits her.
So that's it for this podcast. With thanks to Steve, to Rad, to Ruben, who we drafted last minute. All of the things we've been talking about you can find on the website, which is pieandvinyl.co.uk. Do check it out. Check out the blog. There's lots of good recommendations. If you listen to this before Christmas, have a great Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
If
Merry
it's
Christmas.
The new year, happy 2014.
Happy New Year.
And we'll be with you again soon.
See you soon.
See
you later.